Good morning, everyone. It is one of the great theological debates of church history, a question that has been much discussed but remains yet unresolved, the question of, will there be dogs in heaven? There are people who feel strongly on both sides. Some of you may be old enough to remember that in 1989, Universal Pictures took a very strong theological position on this when they released their movie, All Dogs Go to Heaven. But still, there are some among us who would say yes, and some who would say no. And so today, you are here to bear witness as I attempt once and for all to resolve the question of, will there be dogs in heaven? Before we come to that, we should look together to our passage for today. We find Jesus has ventured into the region of Tyre and Sidon, which is outside of Jewish territory, a large coastal city along the Mediterranean. And clearly we're told that Jesus is heading there with the intentions of being left alone. We've seen him along the way, making attempts to retreat, only to be found out by the Jewish crowds. And so now we see him taking these measures of venturing outside of Jewish territory in the hopes that he can have a little repose in preparation for what is ahead. But nonetheless, we're told that there is one woman, a Gentile woman of Syrophoenician background, who somehow becomes aware of Jesus' presence in that place. We're told that this woman has a daughter who is in deep distress. And in her motherly love, with a sense of desperation, she finds Jesus. She comes to him in hope that perhaps he can be of help in this dire situation faced within her household. And we're told that she is a Gentile, which means that it's being emphasized here that she is from outside of the fold of the Jewish community where Jesus' ministry has largely been focused up to this point. We're also told by commentators who have insight into the culture of that time that she likely would have been a person of some standing from the upper crust of society, and that in all likelihood, within the landscape of that time, she would have seen herself as superior to this young Jewish rabbi. But nonetheless, in her desperation, we now find her humbling herself and coming before Jesus, we're told, and she falls before him, and we're told that she begs him to do something for her daughter. This woman is willing to let go of all of those things that stand between her and Jesus in terms of prestige and standing, and in her motherly desperation to plead for help. And so we're left with the question in this moment of what will come of this? Will it work? Because in coming to approach this Jewish rabbi, this woman is daring to cross boundaries that exist in the culture of that time, boundaries of politics and religion that would separate someone like her from how she likely would perceive someone like Jesus. So would it work? The situation is bringing into the forefront of our awareness the problem of Jewish and Gentile relations of that time. And this woman finds herself on the wrong side of the lines in terms of religion, nationality, and gender. But we see her crossing that line in motherly desperation. So we think about our world today, we're keenly aware that our society is filled with individuals who are experiencing similar desperation, whether it be because of a crisis that they face economically, psychologically, physically, within key relationships, within their lives. And so many people in our world today are faced with a similar question of, where can I turn to receive help? Where can I encounter care? Is there anywhere that I can go where I can receive acceptance, where someone will notice me, someone will welcome me, someone will tend to me in my desperation, in my need? As an immigrant in this country, like so many other immigrants who have found their way here, I remain keenly interested in the political situation of the country from which I came. And so because this is the U.S. election cycle that we find ourselves in the thick of right now, I can't help but be a little obsessed by what is going on down there. And some of what we find filtering to the surface pains me deeply. As we encounter prominent voices within the current U.S. political discourse referring to immigrants as animals and as not human, or referring to their political rivals as vermin, I feel almost the need to apologize, to recite those words out loud. But I think they provide us really important insight into the fact that though we would perceive ourselves as the sophisticated residents of this advanced 21st century age, that we still carry within our hearts a capacity to draw lines, to erect barriers, and for those lines and those barriers to impact what happens in the space between ourselves and others. So that sometimes as people sit in their own desperation with their own questions, where can I turn? They're unsure. How do I cross the lines that I experience around me in hopes that I can be received, that I can be accepted, that I can be helped? Now, as we come back to the experience of this woman in this passage, the situation, frankly, doesn't look all that good. Because what we hear Jesus say to her here in this passage sounds a little bit hard-hitting. Jesus says a lot of hard things in the Gospels. But to me, as I've sat with this passage, this strikes me as particularly hard-hitting. As the woman comes and throws herself down before him and asks for Jesus' assistance, he says, "First, let the children eat all they want, for it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." Oof. Some, as they've wrestled with this passage, suggest that it seems that Jesus is being a bit rude here. And others have gone so far as to see this as an example of Jesus actually being racist and functioning kind of within the blind spots of his own cultural identity in this time. I do think that there are a few points of clarity that can be helpful to us here. One, it's an interesting note about these words from Jesus, his choice of words. He chooses to use the word for a dog that is essentially a word of affection. It would be the dogs that would have a place within the household. It's a word that we might choose in some context to translate as puppy, rather than another word that we actually encounter a number of places elsewhere in the Gospels, which is a very specific word that is meant to describe those dogs who are out on the streets outside the household. So, Jesus isn't picturing this woman and people like her as that kind of dog. And he's at least implying that someone in her situation, from her background, actually has a place within God's household. But his concern here seems to be with a matter of priority, as Romans 1:16 says that this good news was first for the Jews and then for the Gentiles. And that seems to come through in what Jesus is saying here in this verse. So to grasp these qualifications, if you will, it can be helpful for us in recognizing that it maybe tempers and tones down what Jesus says somewhat. But it does not entirely take the edge off of things, for sure. And so perhaps we're left with the question today of but why? Why, as this mother comes and throws herself before Jesus, would he choose to handle these moments in this way? And I must confess to you today that I'm not a big fan of the interpretations that would unduly pin rudeness on Jesus in this moment. And I'm also not a fan of the interpretations that are seeking to understand that Jesus is being racist in this moment. Those things don't strike me as consistent with the character of the Messiah that we encounter throughout the Gospels. So perhaps I am eager to find another way to handle what we encounter here. And so I've been intrigued by how some expert students of this passage have handled the situation in suggesting that maybe what we encounter here isn't so much Jesus being outrightly rude or being racist, but what if perhaps he is presenting this woman and us with a riddle? That he is functioning in these moments as the wise and expert teacher who is presenting to his students a scenario that invites her to mount an argument against what he said. What if in these moments what we really see is Jesus playing the role of the devil's advocate? Now that's something you probably didn't think you'd hear coming to church today. Jesus, the devil's advocate. But functioning in that role, what if perhaps Jesus isn't the least bit disappointed to be defeated by this woman's reply to what he has to say? But again, we might still linger with that question of why would the expert teacher choose this particular strategy in engaging with this woman? Commentators who've wrestled with this passage suggest that it's helpful for us to remember that Jesus, when he engaged with people, was always aware of what was going on in the room. And that he always had an eye to the presence of his disciples, this community that he was forming. This particular encounter, Jesus employs a metaphor that's rooted in the bread at the table. There are a number of different incidents that play out in the Gospel of Mark, some of which we've heard about recently, where bread comes to the forefront. And that bread throughout the Gospel of Mark is always meant to symbolize the blessings of the Messiah's ministry. And over again, sadly, we see in the disciples a lack of understanding of what Jesus is doing, a lack of understanding of what the bread is meant to symbolize. And so in this particular situation, there is a parallel passage over in Matthew 15, where as the Syrophoenician woman comes, we actually see the disciples responding in irritation and encouraging that she be sent away. So clearly they don't entirely have a grasp on what is happening in these moments. So what if Jesus doesn't actually need persuading from this woman? What if they do? What if Jesus recruits this woman to help him in teaching this community of disciples who have accompanied to him that his community is actually for all? What if he is subtly appropriating some of the sentiments that he knows are in the room in order to play out an object lesson that will be beneficial for all? And what if as he is saying this to this woman, he is looking at his disciples out of the corner of his eye with raised eyebrow, with an attentiveness to how they will respond to what they see playing out in these moments? And so we see the woman as Jesus challenges her in this way, certainly even though we've taken some of the edge off of what Jesus says here, could still be received as hard-hitting and insulting. But the woman in her desperation, she persists. And so she responds to Jesus, staying within his metaphor and extending his riddle by saying, "Even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." And Jesus responds back by saying, "For such a reply, you may go. The demon has left your daughter." And so we're told that she went home and she found her child lying on the bed and the demon gone. A powerful turning point in the life of this woman and her household. But in actuality, this is a powerful turning point in the unfolding of the gospel. Because it's in a moment like this, it's as though Jesus is saying, "Listen, I'm aware that these boundaries exist in our world. But I want you to understand that I am crossing these boundaries, that I intend to overcome them." And so as we see Jesus' ministry carry on from here, We actually see him at a greater frequency beginning to move into and out of, again, the Gentile regions. And along the way, he feeds 4,000 people and he heals individuals. And we see the timeline beginning to accelerate as Gentiles increasingly receive the blessings of the kingdom as well. It's as though Jesus is demonstrating through his ministry with greater and greater measure that these individuals have been invited to the table as well. Look, I am endeavoring to adopt them into my household. They will have a place as my dearly loved children. Those who will be included, those who will be full participants and full beneficiaries of the blessings of my kingdom. We're not going to leave them to a crummy place in the kingdom of God, but they have a place of full belonging at the table. Now, we're told that the Gospel of Mark actually likely was penned in the context of the church in Rome, and that a story like this would have actually been very poignant in that context, because it's believed that there was tension within the church in Rome between Jews and Gentiles over who really belonged and what were some of the criteria that would determine who belonged. And so a story like this would speak right into the midst of that controversy and invite and challenge everyone to consider what Jesus was doing in crossing and overcoming the boundaries that exist between people. A timely word in that context. But I'm convinced this continues to be a timely word for us today as well. As though Jesus is reaching out across time and saying, amid all of the biases and the blind spots of our culture, he desires to continue to form a people, a community of disciples who understand increasingly what he is doing. It's as though Jesus is looking at his church across the world today and inviting us to contemplate for ourselves, who are those who, according to our culture, seem undeserving of the blessings of my table? And it's as though Jesus is saying to us, I want you to know that I desire to give them my bread as well. I desire for you to understand that I intend to overcome the boundaries that stand in their way. And it's as though he's looking at the church today with that, perhaps that mischievous glint in his eye, saying, do you understand? Will you join me and letting them know that they have a place of welcome at my table? Because Jesus is helping us to appreciate that in the kingdom of heaven, there are no dogs, only children. Amen.